This episode is brought to you by Fast Enterprises. Fast helps motor vehicle agencies serve the public by delivering enterprise modernization projects on time and on budget every time. Improve customer service and be ready for whatever the future brings. Give Fast a call at 1-877-ASK-FAST or visit us on the web at fastenterprises.com. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AnvaCast. This week, we're going to be talking about a topic that continues to raise in profile and raise in conversation, and that is about managing data and managing access to data. More specifically, we're going to be talking about a recently approved best practice that will soon be published for ANVA members around this topic. And to join me this week to talk about it, I'm pleased to welcome Minty Patel, the Driver and Vehicle Information Program Manager from the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation Driver and Vehicle Services Division, as well as Julie Knittle, the Director of Member Support for Regions 3 and 4 at ANVA. Now, why are they joining us? Minty was a member of the working group that produced this best practice, and Julie served as ANVA's project manager for the best practice. Ladies, welcome to both of your first appearance on the AnvaCast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to start with kind of painting the picture as to why ANVA even decided to create this working group. Julie, let me start with you, since I know that you, just by the nature of what you do every day, are talking to many members across the jurisdictions. Take me back a couple of years before the working group even started. What was happening around the conversation? What were you hearing from ANVA members that kind of coalesced into the need to tackle the topic?
Well, thank you, Ian. I'd be happy to talk about what was happening. First, I'd like to say that the DMVs have always made the protection of an individual's personal information one of their highest priorities, as they have information on potentially millions of customers, and in the wrong hands, that could have significant impact on the customer. Data privacy has always been important to the public, and they've always been concerned about their private data. But a few years ago, specifically, there was a real increase in the fake vehicle warranty cards that people were receiving in the mail. And that was the beginning, or the wave, if you will, of the public beginning to ask if their information was being sold or shared. And not long after that, you had the Target and the Home Depot breaches, which were very high profile and brought yet more attention to the public's awareness of their own information that is out there. As a result, there was a lot of media coverage that educated the public about what personal information is available and recommendations to keep your data private. So on the heels of both of those, there also followed a lot of media coverage regarding the sale of individuals' personally identifiable information by the DMVs. And the sharing of that same data with other organizations or agencies, such as federal agencies or law enforcement. And people wanted to know, why was their data being sold and why was it being shared to these other organizations and for what purpose? So that was the beginning of all of this and sort of the status of what things look like at the time. And essentially, the challenge is balancing that transparency and the protection of the data.
So Minty, as the group first got together and started tackling it, was there a sense, was there an agreement that this was a collective challenge? Were some in different places than others in terms of starting to figure it out? Where did the temperature seem to be among the group?
So on our initial group meeting, we had to figure it out first that what type of practices are in place amongst the different jurisdictions. And we also brainstorm ideas that how can we help those jurisdictions who are in the process of implementing a data privacy program. And we came up with our goal to help set up a comprehensive, integrated, and centralized strategy to achieve data privacy compliance when developing this guide.
Hmm. Now, when you say compliance with the different jurisdiction statutes, federal statutes, where is the compliance?
Yes, so compliance is with the data privacy law, whether it's a state level or it's a federal level.
The large federal level being the DPPA, or are there other federal privacy laws and standards that the group had to take into account?
Our main focus was the DPPA.
Okay. And as you started to share beneath the federal level, as you look at the different jurisdiction levels, was there generally consistency among the different jurisdictions in terms of any requirements or regulations beyond the federal statutes? Was there consistency, or was there a lot of differences from jurisdiction to jurisdiction?
I would say there are some consistency that we found that is aligned with the DPPA requirement.
Mm-hmm. So Julie, how did the group tackle it? This is a large, complicated topic. This is not one of those straightforward, the agency has to do X, Y, and Z, and here's the best way to do X, Y, and Z. This is a much more layered, nuanced conversation. How did people get around the table and tackle that type of a topic?
Well, we started by bringing together 12 jurisdictional experts from across the country that are running these programs day in and day out at their organizations. And we began having conversations about what is it that they do in their jurisdiction? What are their best practices? How are they set up in the structure of their program, and what are sort of their operating procedures and policies and guiding principles that are used there. We shared all that information, compiled the information. We then met with industry partners who are in the private sector, who are on the receiving end of this data, and work in the data privacy arena in other aspects of their companies. And we met with them over the course of a year and a half and gathered information from them from a user standpoint as well as their expertise. And then our jurisdiction members spent a lot of time researching best practices in the data privacy arena, in addition to what they are already doing at their organization. And then we spent the better part of 2 years compiling all that information and identifying the best practices in a variety of areas that we are recommending for the motor vehicle agencies.
So before we go into those recommendations, you said something interesting there about the private sector, the receivers of the information. Earlier on, you talked about, you know, this is, you know, based on the idea that these agencies, these public agencies of driver and vehicle licensing agencies, are holding all of this data and have to protect it. Tell me that, what's the use case, what's the scenario where the private sector is getting access and receiving that information that you have to make sure these safeguards are in place? I'm not sure everybody really understands how that dynamic works. So could one of you kind of walk us through some of those scenarios?
Sure, I'm happy to. And Minty could probably add several more. But there are many benefits to public safety in sharing data. And one example that comes to mind are motor vehicle safety recalls. And motor vehicle agencies provide vehicle owner and registrant data to support these safety recalls in notifying the owners when there could be a class action lawsuit, for example. The data is also shared with law enforcement to verify driver identification or enforce the traffic safety laws or confirm vehicle ownership, for example. Those are just a couple off the top of my head. I'm sure Minty could provide several more as well.
Yeah, and so, yeah, Julie pretty much covered main reason for data sharing, along with we have a data sharing for the employment purposes or insurance verification purposes as well.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the recommendations. Obviously, it's a large document, so we're not going to have time today to talk about everything that's in there. But if you had to characterize kind of in large buckets the types of content that someone's going to find in this best practice, how would you chunk it out, for lack of a more refined phrase?
Well, I guess I'll start there. So I guess I would chunk it out by laws and regulations. And we, as Minty said, we did not touch on all the laws or regulations that are out there, but we did hit sort of the key ones that we feel are influential. Data strategy and framework, and specifically the adoption of a governance program. That was a concept that is fairly new in the motor vehicle agency arena. So we are recommending the adoption of a governance program as well as a risk management framework to help evaluate the data they do have, the risk associated, controls in place to mitigate that risk, and then how it applies to every product or service or system that they may have. We have touched on the request from the external parties who want this data, how to handle those requests, how to analyze them, establish the pre-approval standards that ultimately feed into a data sharing agreement with these entities. And then, of course, the compliance and audit aspects that would address the methods or the benefits of monitoring all of this access. Mm-hmm. And I think probably the other two pieces I would touch on are the organizational structure and the recommended levels of responsibility as it relates specifically to a data privacy program and operation. For example, establishing a data privacy officer. Data privacy traditionally over the years gets, you know, added to someone's plate in addition to the mm-hmm. millions of other things that they do on a day-to-day basis. So we looked at that as well as the training that is required for or recommended for the motor vehicle agency staff and the entities that receive that data to ensure that they understand the risks that come with receiving that data and using it.
So, Minty, from a jurisdiction perspective, where do you think in these different areas, which ones might be more of an adjustment from what folks are doing now versus are more of an affirmation on what they're currently doing? So when they look at these best practices and they compare to what they're doing, you know, even using Pennsylvania as an example, well, we've got these four things, we're doing what the best practice says, or we're pretty close and we can tweak. Now there are these other areas where maybe there are newer ideas because this area is evolving so quickly. And so it's not a matter of, you know, that a jurisdiction hasn't been doing it, it's just that it's a new idea, so they may have to start up something new. Any sense as to what might be some of those areas that are going to be those bigger lifts for jurisdictions because it's a newer area that hasn't been tackled?
The biggest one I would think is the developing a data governance structure. And that's the very initial step in order to effectively run the data privacy program in each jurisdiction. In Pennsylvania, our policies basically drives our data privacy program, and it requires us, each agency, to establish a data governance structure in order to handle and well manage the data that is coming in and out.
Hmm. And what type of effort do you think that developing that governance structure is going to take? Will folks be able to look at the best practice and pull a template and plug and play? Or is it really so jurisdiction specific that each agency is going to have to tackle it individually and customize? Do either one of you have a sense there?
So we have provided some models in the best practice, both for data governance as well as a risk management framework. They can follow those models, but we recognize that each jurisdiction may be set up differently or have different resources available. So we also recommended the key components of each of those things so it could be customized and incrementally implemented in the jurisdictions if they're not ready to implement 100% right out the gate.
Mm-hmm. And would this data governance piece, would this be the natural starting place for a jurisdiction, or are there other parts of the best practice that, you know, folks may want to start with first as the fundamental building blocks to move toward a more comprehensive best practice?
So data governance is really sort of the foundational building block, because it's a system that defines within an organization who has the authority and control over the data assets that the MVA has and how all that data can be used. It includes the people, the processes, the technologies, and it helps ensure that the data is managed responsibly and that the varying levels of authority for decision making are appropriate and spread out through the MVA. So it's not just a person or a position that is making that decision. And it applies to every system, every service that they provide, every product that is produced by the MVA. So it really is the foundational block. I will say, though, if they are not able to implement that right away, there are other pieces in the best practice. For example, in the compliance and audit section, you could take that section and enhance your audit program while still working on the data governance piece, if you will.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because so much about data governance or the privacy officer, a lot of that is internal behind the curtain that agencies, you know, might want to do when they look at best practice. But there's some parts of it, like the audit and other areas, where it might change your relationships and how you interact with external parties to the agency. So can you talk a little bit about how the best practice suggests making sure that those relationships outside the agency are as tight and secure as they can be?
Sure. So we do address that in the compliance and audit section specifically, as well as the outreach and education. And it really is to educate those recipients of the data, having the conversations up front, defining the parameters around the data that they're going to receive for the authorized usage, verifying the usage, and it's really those conversations before you start drawing up the agreements that will support that are going to carry that relationship through some of the tougher aspects, such as a compliance finding or an audit finding that may come down the road.
So as you went through this process, there's always surprises or these unexpected gems that we discover. So I'm curious for each of you, you know, what did you learn that you didn't expect would be part of the best practice or part of a good approach to protecting data privacy that emerged, that kind of evolved itself out of the conversations? Julie, what was the gem for you?
The gem for me was really, I think, seeing all of these pieces come together. So having the knowledge that I do of the motor vehicle agencies across the country, there are some amazing programs in place. And when I really started looking at this and all the components coming together, I was impressed. But two, I went through a significant training with a data privacy organization that provides certification in this. And at the end of that training, I thought, wow, we nailed it. What this group has come up with really aligns with this training that's being provided in a whole nother arena for a different purpose, but still all about data privacy. So I think for me, it was just sort of that wow moment that these folks that all came together and spent this time sharing their expertise, what they put together was very comprehensive when you pulled all of that in one bucket.
Minty, what about you? What was the unexpected discovery from this process?
So for me, unexpected discovery of this process, and it is a gem for me, is the sitting with our stakeholder face to face. It helped us a lot to learn about their business processes, and it also helped us in a way to draft this document that they can also adapt some practice that we are suggesting for external parties in a positive way. So that collaboration was a very, surprising for me.
That's great. So what haven't we touched on? You know, we know that folks are excited that this is coming out. They're going to get excited to use it, to compare what they do and put things in place. What are the other highlights that maybe you want to call out to tell people to look out for when they read the document?
Sure. Thank you. So I would definitely start with a record management and compliance and audit part. Those two sections will give them, like Julie mentioned earlier, that even though those jurisdictions that they are still working towards establishing some type of governance structure, they could still able to adapt many good practices just from these two chapters, and they will be able to put it in a place and able to make their data privacy program strong.
Julie, any other highlights for you that we want to keep on the radar?
I would say there's two things. One, the ecosystem that we talk about to identify all of your data. It became very clear that, you know, it's like a pot of spaghetti, if you will, how all this data works within the various systems. And so following that and identifying that ecosystem of every data point, I think is one. And then two, I would like to point out, while we do touch on some information technology type security recommendations, I do want folks to know it's not intended to be an IT security document. There are those documents that already exist, and they are best practices and requirements in their own right. So this focus that we had was really on the data privacy aspects, and there is some IT security parameters that we refer to, but I don't want anybody to have the thinking that it is going to be an IT document as well.
Yeah, that's really a fine line and important distinction to draw, because the idea of IT security and, you know, having secure systems blends in with how you keep the data secure and protected. But the best practice really takes the approach more about a programmatic way to protect the data and access to the data, and IT essentially becomes the tool to do that.
Correct.
So this has been fantastic. I know folks are excited about the best practice. I believe we should have it out and published sometime around late February, early March. Is that correct, Julie?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. We also like to use the AmvaCast always as a way to get to know folks in the Amva community. So I just want to ask the two of you a couple of quick questions so that folks know a little bit more about you. Minty, how long have you been in your role in Pennsylvania?
I have been with PennDOT over 10 years, mm-hmm. and I am in a program manager capacity for almost 2 years.
And was your background already in this information management, data control type work, or did it evolve into that from a different training and background?
I evolved that from different training background. I was an auditor for 5 years and a certified fraud examiner. So that helped me a lot with managing this program with Pennsylvania. And after getting into this job, actually, I ended up starting my second bachelor degree in information security and risk mm-hmm. analyst. So that is helping me a lot as well.
Well, that's... It's exciting to hear, not only to learn about you, but to know that that's the type of expertise and background that went into the document. And you're but one of, I know, a large working group. That's super exciting. Julie, what about you? How long have you been with AMVA now?
So May will be 4 years for me.
All right. But you are no stranger to the motor vehicle community when you joined AMVA.
No, prior to coming to AMVA, I was with the Washington State Department of Licensing for 14 years.
Hmm. You're a native of Washington State?
I say I'm a native, but I did spend my young childhood years in California.
Always the West Coast.
Right? Yes, definitely.
Very good. Great. Well, I hope both of you have been holding up during this unusual year. I know this is a working group that had the opportunity to meet in person early on before everything went into a virtual mode. Minty, talk quickly about that, how the working group was able to pivot from having worked in a more traditional manner of meeting in person to having to finish their work strictly virtually. Were you able to pivot? Did you find any challenges in not being able to meet in person?
No, we did not actually. We were quickly able to adapt the virtual meeting, and we worked extensively virtually to finish this guide. You know, you mm-hmm. can tell as well.
And Julie, I know that you would quite regularly be on the road for all different types of purposes, and nevertheless, you, like so many others of us, have been grounded, so to speak, the last 10 months.
That is correct. So it actually, I was able to spend my time virtually with them from my home office, which made it a little bit easier than a airport waiting area or a hotel room.
We can all relate to that. All right. Well, thank you both for taking some time out to talk to us about not only yourselves, but about the best practice, the great efforts of this working group to put together what I know is going to be an extremely valuable resource for all of AMVA members, not only for the jurisdictions, but for our associate members and our federal partners and our other stakeholders that are all part of that ecosystem that you talked about in terms of sharing and protecting data.
Thank you.
I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in again to the AmvaCast. I want to thank our producer, Claire Jeffrey, and we'll see you next week on the AmvaCast. Stay well, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for AmbaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. This episode was brought to you by Fast Enterprises. Visit us at ambacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.